Hi, everybody. David Capes with the Stone Chapel Podcast. Hope you're doing well. But if you are not doing well, today's podcast may be for you. Philip Fleming, who's the Dean of Durham Cathedral, is our guest. He's written a terrific book. It's entitled Being Real, the Apostle Paul's Hardship Narratives and the Stories We Tell Today, published in October by SCM Press. It's a terrific book. I would recommend it. It's about Paul, yes. It's about his hardships, and it's about how he was very authentic with it. He was real, and the range of suffering that he did and the way he talked about it is really very interesting. So today, we're talking to Dr. Philip Fleming about his book, Being Real, on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm Philip Fleming, and I'm Dean of Durham in the northeast of England.
Dr. Philip Fleming, so good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed, David. It's great to be with you.
I'm going to call you Philip through this, if that's okay.
Of course indeed. You go right ahead.
All right. What does that mean, you're Dean of the Cathedral? This is one of the most magical, wonderful places in all of England. Yes, it's beautiful. So tell us a little bit, what does that job entail?
Bill Bryson described Durham Cathedral as the best cathedral on planet Earth. I've yet to find anyone who really disagreed with him, David. So I'm Dean of Durham, which means I oversee the life and mission of Durham Cathedral. Durham Cathedral, people have been worshipping Jesus Christ here for 1,000 years. The current building is 900 years old, and it's a centre for pilgrimage, prayer and proclamation within the northeast of England. It's a place where Cuthbert is buried. St. Cuthbert, one of our very finest northeast saints, is also where Bede is buried. Bede, as you know, the father of English history and a polymath in his own generation, an 8th century scholar. But we're a living church. We have people visiting us for pilgrimage, and we have worship 3 times a day and Sunday congregations as well. And we welcome people from all over the world to come and explore and encounter God.
So if somebody's traveling in England and they're sort of sweeping to the northeast, a stop off in Durham is... You will not regret that, because it is amazing.
You will come in on the train, David, and you'll have the most amazing view of the cathedral and the castle, which is part of a World Heritage Site. And you'll come up to the steps and you'll walk where thousands and thousands of people have walked in the past. It will not disappoint you. The pillars, the Norman pillars, are as they were built in 1133. It will take your breath away.
They are huge. They're really big. How many people does it take to sort of get around one of those?
Yeah, well, I reckon probably it's about a dozen people, David, you know, because they're pretty big, because you have to really stretch your arms out.
Sure, yeah, and yeah.
I say to the people when they come, you'll never forget the size of these pillars. But above all, we're a place where we want people to encounter God. So the building points towards God, and my ministry as Dean is to help people to discover God, to encounter God, and to know God's love in Jesus Christ.
How did you, Philip Fleming, become the Dean? What was sort of your journey life that led you there?
That's quite a good question, actually, David. It's a question that I sort of found myself a bit surprised to be in the role, really. So I grew up in Sussex in the south of England. I went to church as a child, but there wasn't really a kind of any experience of a living faith. So I came to a living faith at university when I was 18. I was studying German and Russian at Cambridge, and some friends just explained the gospel to me. And I'd understood that Jesus died for me and loved me, and I wanted to give my life back to God. And so I remember kind of even in those days, Evensong, choral Evensong in King's College Chapel in Cambridge was something that really helped me connect with God. But I went off to finish German and Russian, and then I studied theology here in Durham. I was a curate, so an assistant minister for 5 years. Then I was a vicar, so a pastor of a big church. Big in UK terms, David. It's not big in US terms, but big in UK terms, for 11 years. And then I went to be principal of a theological college here in Durham called Cranmer Hall within St. John's College, which is when I used to teach New Testament and leadership. And then suddenly, kind of out of the blue, God called me to apply for this role. I'd never sort of worked in a cathedral before, but I guess I've got some experience in terms of leadership and vision in large organizations. And I just felt a real burden that God placed on my heart to offer myself for the mission of God in this place. Cathedrals are an amazing opportunity to reach out with the good news and love of Jesus Christ. And I've been doing this job for 6 months now, and it continues to be a real privilege, but it continues to be a surprise.
Yeah,
to,
probably every day, a little bit of a surprise,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. Cathedrals, I mean, to me, they're amazing places where they sit in a city, and often the size of them and the way it just draws people. And even people who are secular find themselves kind of going in there and having a sense of transcendence.
You absolutely do. And what's really interesting is people come in, they're blown away, and they want to sort of do something in response. So often the people will light a candle and say a prayer. Sometimes for God, they're kind of almost reaching out to, really. And it's great here in the Northeast. We don't charge for admission, so it's free to come in. And people just say, I just felt drawn to the cathedral. I needed to pray. And these are people perhaps who don't worship normally, but they recognize that there's something bigger than simply, you know, what they see on the news every day. There's a God who made this world and a God who inspired the creation of this extraordinary building. Mm. And it sort of reminds you how small you are and how great God is.
Yeah. We need that reminder from time to time, don't we? Yeah. We're not the center of the universe. Now, you've written a terrific book called Being Real, and the subtitle is The Apostle Paul's Hardship Narratives and the Stories We Tell Today. It's a fascinating book. It's a great book. Well written, but also fun to read. But tell us, what is the big idea, Philip, of your book, Being Real?
The big idea is that we can be real about the tough times in our lives because God is at work in more places than we think. That's the one sentence thing about what the book is about. We can be real about the stories in our lives, tough bits in our lives, the challenging bits in our lives, because God is at work in more places than we think. We often assume that God is at work just when things are going well or when we see answered prayer. But this really interesting thing is particularly to the church in Corinth, Paul says, goes out of his way to tell the Corinthians about the tough times in his life. Why does he do that? He does that because he wants them to see that God is at work in cross-shaped places. God wasn't just at work when Jesus was crucified on the cross. The cross wasn't something that just happened to Jesus. The cross continues to be the pattern through which God works in the world today. And Paul says, look at my life. I'm going to tell you some stories about my life when I've really struggled, but I've known God in those places. And so my book kind of explores those passages in some detail, David. And then it says, hang on, why are we so reluctant as Christians to be honest about some of the tough stuff in our lives? And is it because we're buying into a narrative of shame that thinks God's only at work in the good stuff and not in the bad stuff? And I would suggest, if God's at work in our cross-shaped places, we can tell people about them. And when we tell people about God at work in cross-shaped places, we're giving glory to God. And we're saying, do you know, God's at work in more places than we think, including some of the bits that I struggle with, including the times when I'm physically, emotionally, or socially having a really rough time. That's what the book's about, saying we can be real because Paul was real.
You really focus on 1 and 2 Corinthians, but later in the book, he said, well, you know, I could have written this looking at other books as well, because he, although I think it's really concentrated in 2 Corinthians, perhaps, 1 and 2 Corinthians, but you can still find it in Galatians, you can still find it in Romans and all these kind of things. So it's not just a one-off kind of thing.
No, it's particularly focused, I think, in 1 and 2 Corinthians, David, because of the challenge that Paul was facing in Corinth. In Corinth, there was this real kind of worldview challenge, I think, that Paul was addressing. Because, I mean, we always think, you know, the Corinthians are a bit all over the place.
Yeah.
And what was the problem and all that sort of stuff. Whereas I think their key problem was they were looking at the world through Corinthian glasses, if you like. And Paul says, you know, you've got to look at the world through a cross-shaped lens. So I think that's why in the Corinthian correspondence, you get these stories again and again. But you're right, David. The sense that Paul is honest about his struggles in the other letters is true as well. We're reading 2 Timothy in the cathedral at the moment. And you know all that stuff about, he says, you know, I wasn't ashamed of my chains. You know, he's not going to be shamed by the fact that he was chained.
Yeah.
You know, why were people shamed in those days? Because they thought that suffering was somehow bad. Paul says, I'm not going to be ashamed of this. So you're right. It comes throughout his letters.
Yeah, it really does. I want to read a passage from 2 Corinthians and just get some of your comments on that, if you don't mind. I'm going to read 2 Corinthians chapter 6. So we'll start in verse 3. And then I may stop and ask a question or two as I'm reading. This is a place where Paul very much is honest about what has happened and what he's been through. And not just him, because he talks about we. Mm-hmm. He says, we are putting no obstacle in anyone's way so that no fault may be found with our ministry. But as servants of God, we have commended ourselves in every way through great endurance and afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger. By purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, holiness of spirit, genuine love, truthful speech, and the power of God. With the weapons of righteousness for the right hand and for the left. In honor and dishonor, in ill repute and good repute, we are treated as impostors, and yet we are true. As unknown, and yet we are well known. As dying, and see, we are alive. As punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing yet possessing everything. It's a powerful piece of just rhetoric, isn't it?
Yeah. It's extraordinary. There's two things that I think are really worth spotting there, David. First is the range of suffering that Paul's referring to. So there's the physical suffering that he's going through, you know, the imprisonments, the sleepless nights, the hunger. This is Paul being really honest about his body, David. Yeah?
Right.
So there's the emotional suffering in terms of, you know, the sleepless nights. You know, here's a guy who worries. And then there's, you might describe it as the sort of reputational or social suffering, because he talks about we're treated as imposters, we're treated as people of ill repute. So there's something about Paul is getting flack. He's getting incoming, simply through the nature of his ministry. So that's the first thing to notice, this, about this range of hardships. It's physical, it's emotional, it's what you might call social. The second thing to notice is that this hardship isn't a cul-de-sac for Paul. That last thing does from verses 8, 9, and 10, he uses these contrasts, doesn't he? Imposters, true, unknown, well-known, dying and alive. And I think it's that dying and alive, David. So I think what Paul thinks is, this is Michael Gorman writing about this. I quote him in the book and says, the great thing for Paul is he thinks that as Christians, we need to inhabit Good Friday and Easter Sunday at the same time.
One foot in both worlds, in a way.
One foot in both worlds. In other words, we can be honest about our Good Fridays, David, and we can be expecting that God will be at work in that place. Because what goes on in that place is the power of Easter Sunday fills our Good Friday. Mm-hmm. So I can be having nothing, yet possessing everything. I can be dying and yet see how I'm alive. And so sometimes when I'm really struggling, I might feel, well, yeah, but what's given me the power to keep going even in the midst of the struggle? It's the resurrection power of God at work in my life. And so I think there's something about Paul doesn't glory in suffering for the sake of it. He says, hang on, you know, God's at work in cross-shaped places, not necessarily in taking you out of them and making everything all right and rubbing out all the pain, but enabling you to keep going, to keep praying, to keep praising, to keep loving, to keep forgiving. And he does it again. He does it in 2 Corinthians 4 as well, you know, where he uses this contrast.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate you showing that out. One of the things that strikes me is that our churches, very often our church services, focus more on the Easter and not so much the Good Friday. In other words, probably at any given Sunday, people who've arrived there, it's not just God is good, everything's great, life is fine, but for a lot of them, they may have lost their job. They may have lost a parent or a friend. And so for them, they're struggling. And yet, I don't know very often that churches have a place for people who come in. Now, at least in America, a lot of our mega churches, it's just like praise and worship. It's all good. And yet finding a place for lamentation and for grieving, we don't really provide that. Is that true in the Anglican liturgy?
I think it's One of the gifts of Anglican liturgy, and particularly morning and evening prayer that I pray every day, David, here in the cathedral, is we just read the Psalms every day. We just read psalm after psalm after psalm. And of course, as you know, when you read the Psalms, David, they're not like our modern worship services.
Yeah, they're about half inhabit, of them are laments.
They inhabit a much bigger emotional space.
Yeah.
And the great thing about reading the Psalms is as you read them just day after day after day, it gives you a voice. Sometimes it's for yourself, and sometimes it's for other people. You're lamenting on behalf of other people. You know, there's lots of people I'm lamenting on behalf of as I look at the news at the moment.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Now, I agree with you. In churches, we're not great at doing that. But partly what I suggest we can be doing through the book is telling the stories about our own Good Fridays. I remember I was interviewing, we had a vision evening, and obviously a vision evening when I was a vicar, you want to be fairly upbeat, David. But I made a decision, no, I'm going to interview somebody from my congregation who I know is living with a really a life-threatening illness. She has not seen healing in this world. It's just a struggle to keep breathing sometimes because her muscles are wasting away. And I just interviewed her, and the way she just held on to God in the midst of that. And people were so moved. And you could almost touch the presence of God as I interviewed her.
Wow. Wow.
And I've made the decision when I was a theological college principal just to be honest about some of the struggles I had, including some of the tough stuff that happened to me as a child. Not because I want to get pity from people, but I want to say, look, the Christian life isn't about waltzing from one glory to the next. Christian life is finding God as much in your Good Fridays as in your Easter Sundays. Now, that's actually good news, David, because if the Christian faith is simply for when you're feeling great, that's not much of a gospel. But if the Christian faith is about a God who's at work in the tough stuff as well as the great stuff, that's good news.
I think that's very helpful for a lot of people, if not today, then tomorrow. And I appreciate you you bringing out the idea that we also mourn not just for ourselves, but often for others who are struggling. And that's one of the Beatitudes, blessed are those who mourn. And I take that not only for my own grief and sorrow, but also for the grief of other people and the losses that are being experienced. It's not that we're comparing ourselves necessarily. It's just that, just understanding the reality of this world. There are beautiful things that happen. There are terrible things that happen. And we live between those two realms.
There's a great writer, Federico Villanueva, who writes for Langham Park. So he wrote a book called It's Okay Not to Be Okay. And he tells a great story about, I think he was in the Philippines, and they just had a major natural disaster, and he went to church, a huge flood, and went to church 2 weeks later, and it wasn't mentioned.
Wow.
And he said, well, how's this not been mentioned? Was God not there? Was God not present? You know, in that sense of denial about what's right in front of you, I don't think it does God any favors. It doesn't do our credibility as Christians any favors.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with
you. And I think, you know, we've got a huge scandal in the UK, in the Church of England, around safeguarding. We're not the only institution around child abuse and child sexual abuse within the church context. And, you know, as I say, many institutions in the UK are struggling with this. And I think sometimes we think we're glorifying God by pretending it didn't happen. But I think we need to be honest and we need to lament. And I sometimes think we can be reluctant to do that, but actually we do ourselves no credit by being unreal about the things right in front of us.
No, I think you're exactly right. When our son died, listeners to this podcast will remember, I've discussed this before, he died about 4 years ago as he was really struggling and the cancer was doing its worst to him. I couldn't write anything. I couldn't communicate anything. But after he died, I used Facebook, of all things, as a place to kind of tell his story. And I showed pictures of him, and I would express how much I missed him and how hard it had been. It went on for months, and I had people coming back say, thank you for being honest about grief. You know, and I did it in a variety of ways. I did it on my webpage as well, the davidbcapes.com. And I had a chance to tell his story. Because his life was more than just the cancer that ended it. His life was 36 years of some really wonderful things. So I think being able to do that shows signs of, and describing what you've described here, help us a great deal in terms of really dealing with what's real and what's happening in life, as opposed to sort of this person that I want to everybody to think I am. But I am the one who struggles, and I know everyone is. I like that, and I often refer to the fact that the name Israel means the one who struggles with God, right? Mm. And wrestles with God. And that's part of what we do through the Psalms, through Job, through other places as well.
And I think it gives permission for us to be real about that. And that's actually as part of being attractive, because I think what new generations want is they want people who will be honest. You know, kids, they recognize that, you know, Instagram, social media, Snapchat, they're fake, really.
Yeah.
And this is what's really interesting. There's a great book called The Happiness Effect by Donna Freitas, interviewing college students in the US about the sort of pressure in social media simply look great all the time. I tell you, it's not sustainable. It's just not, you cannot live your life pretending to look great all the time. And so, you know, I've been deliberate as a dad. You know, I want my kids to be able to see me cry. Mm. You know, they tease me about it. Oh, dad's crying again. But I want to say, look, I inhabit an emotional space whereby I find things hard. And I think that's what younger generation want to see. They want to see authenticity. They don't want to, they're very canny about things that look fake.
Yeah. Dr. Philip Fleming, we've been talking about your book, Being Real, The Apostle Paul's Hardship Narratives and the Stories We Tell Today, published just last year, October of 2013, by SCM Press. Thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Thanks very much, David. It's been good to be with you.
Thanks to Philip Fleming for being with us today here on the Stone Chapel Podcast. Really loved his book, Being Real. It focuses upon 1 and 2 Corinthians, but you could find that same phenomena in other places in Paul. But it also talks about our own lives being real in our own lives, being authentic and speaking authentically about the troubles and the sorrow that we face. It's about finding God. It's about realizing God. It's not just at work in the good times, but also in the bad. Thanks to Kathy Capes for editing the podcast. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. Till next time, I'm David Capes. Thank you for listening.